Need some suspension work and shocks and brakes, brake pads, lining, steering box, transmission, rear end.
Ka-chow.
Check those seat out, cut! It worked! I love this button!
Always remember, if you ain't first, last.
It's 106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark. And we're wearing sunglasses. Hit it.
All right. Welcome back to the Unnamed Movie Car Podcast, recording at you live from Le Mans, France, because we watched Ford versus Ferrari.
That is correct. Hello. And, you know, you had a great idea. We should do a 24-hour podcast.
That would be probably the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
To do a 24-hour podcast. But, so we're not going to be doing that.
No.
As you're checking your Spotify scroll bar that we're on Spotify.
Yes.
It is not 24 hours. But I'm super excited to still talk about this because this was actually your pick.
It was my pick.
Although it was my favorite movie. I had seen it before. You had not seen
it before. I had never seen it, but so many people told us. They're like, oh, you got to watch Ford versus Ferrari. And I'm like, yeah, whatever. And I just kind of blew it off. And then you were like, yeah, you know, somewhere in here we should do this. So I was like, yeah, this sounds right. It feels good. So, yeah, that was
So what were your thoughts?
I hated it. Absolutely. I can't even say two words without laughing. Honestly, one of the best movies I've ever seen. Absolutely. Top to bottom. Awesome movie. Absolutely. If you, by the way, and we're not going to do spoilers for the first 10 minutes.
Right, yeah.
Which
we didn't put our timer up in our $151 million studio. We didn't put the timer. It's 2:19 p.m. Sorry to shatter whatever
I will,
you thought we maybe did these in the middle of the night or something, which our energy levels probably reflect. But
we're breaking the fourth wall right now.
We're breaking. Is there a fourth wall in audio?
I don't know. Is there?
Is that the fourth? Are we breaking the third ear?
What's the third ear?
Yeah, we're breaking the third ear.
I don't know, but we're not going to say anything. We're not going to do any spoilers.
No spoilers for the first 10 minutes.
That's our rule.
What did you think of the movie?
The movie I thought was just absolutely excellent. Because great story. Absolutely great.
Fantastic,
story.
Yeah. I totally forgot. We haven't done this in a little bit. We took a little bit of a vacation.
Yes.
On our super mega yachts from our $151 million we got paid from Spotify. Starring Matt Damon, Christian Bale, and John Bernthal.
Yes.
Among others, but those were the three those leads. And I think they all did a phenomenal job.
Oh, they were all excellent. Absolutely. You know, everyone kind of goes, oh, I don't know, Matt Damon. He did a great job.
Matt Damon is a fantastic actor,
Shout out to Matt Damon, Christian Bale.
I believe it's Matt Damon. There's a video. Well, there's also a video of Christian Bale going off on a lighting guy.
Of course.
But there's a video of Matt Damon getting real pissed off on a recent film set.
Oh, yeah?
Because the COVID guidelines were not being followed. People were not wearing their masks and stuff.
Yeah.
And he was yelling about how you need to be professionals. People need to put food on their tables.
Yeah.
You know, it's a gift to be able to do this.
Yes.
Blah, blah, blah. Which I actually totally agreed with. It was a harsh rant. It's always hard to listen to someone yell like that, but it was actually kind of truthful, and it was nice that he was kind of trying to defend, you know, acting.
And I want to say, too, that if you were to follow around anyone doing any job, you're going to catch them having a bad day.
Oh, yeah, of course.
And going off, and it's not, I mean, that's why there's only, like, that I know of, the one thing of Christian Bale going off, and the few things. If anything, I've never even seen anything negative about Matt Damon, but it is. I thought about that today because there's even like a Casey Kasem. If you look it up, there's a thing where Casey Kasem gets upset about they're running a happy story after talking about a dog dying.
Yeah.
It's a very famous thing, but how many of those do you hear about him? Anyone you follow, you're going to find. Yeah, you're going to find something where. Now, there are certain actors. There's certain
people.
Well,
I was thinking, like, Mel Gibson. Was it Mel Gibson
that Mel Gibson.
Ranted? No, Clint Eastwood. Didn't he do, like, a whole. He yelled at a chair up on a stage for, like, 40 minutes
and
or something?
And who of us has not?
I do have an empty chair next to me.
And
I
I'm going to start yelling at that empty chair next to
you. That's actually something you guys don't know because it's an audio podcast. I only talk to the chair. I never look at my dad in the eyes. I only look into the chair.
We only talk to empty. I talk to the ottoman, which is
it's allergy
the,
season, baby.
Yeah,
out here in France.
You.
Thank you.
I only talk to the ottoman, which is where the electronics are.
Yeah, we actually never our traveling ottoman that comes with us to each location.
Is that right?
We never look at each other in the eye. We always talk. I look down at the chair next to me, and he looks at the ottoman in front
of
him.
It's just better that way, you know. As long as you don't think you're actually talking to any humans,
it keeps it real. It keeps it real.
So we might as well, in our first 10 minutes here or whatever, do our shout-outs.
Oh, yeah. Shout-out Craig Lieberman.
Craig Lieberman.
Shout-out. Yeah.
Definitely.
Probably didn't have anything to do with this film.
No, nothing, but I don't think so. But
well, I was going to say he would have cast better cars, but, I mean, this was a historical piece.
Something we can get into in
the first 10 minutes is the car.
Yeah.
The Ford GT Mark II was the Le Mans winning car. The Mark I... Remember in the film, this isn't really a spoiler. They get the first car comes from Europe.
Yes,
so
right.
So that first car had actually been competing at Le Mans for quite some time.
Really?
I did a little bit of research.
Was that the Mark
One? The Mark One had been going around a couple circuits in Europe because Ford is a very interesting company where their European division of Ford is nearly a different company.
Really?
I mean, like, obviously they share a logo and brand and, you know, the overall CEO oversees everything. But Ford of Europe is very, very different. They developed the original Fiesta.
Those little cars over there, they have a
completely different lineup over in Ford of Europe that we've actually gotten some vehicles from them. That were developed for Europe that moved over here.
That would make
sense. Recently we got the Ford Transit. The Ford Focus RS was a European car that they brought over. The Focus RS has been for sale in Europe for 20 years. We got it for 4 years, and then they canceled it here.
Really?
But they had been doing Ford Focus RSs forever.
Yeah.
The Focus was largely a European vehicle. So Ford of Europe is nearly a different company. So Ford of Europe was racing this Ford GT.
Gotcha.
And then when, you know, Ford America, actual true main Ford, wanted to get into Le Mans racing, they sent the car over.
Wow.
Nut for bolt pretty much got 100% changed.
Yeah.
But that starting Mark One car was from Europe.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the look was pretty much the same.
Right.
But it was...
It had a small block engine in it, which the Le Mans winning one had a 7-liter V8, which was actually pulled out of the Ford Galaxy.
Really?
It was nut and bolt changed again. It's not a Galaxy engine, but the original engine was pulled out of the Galaxy and tweaked and tuned and pushed and pulled until it made a lot more horsepower.
Yeah. When they talked about that, they mentioned something about putting a 427 in there or something.
Yeah, yeah.
That was pretty darn cool.
It might have been
a
440. I don't have the cubic inch down, but it was 4-something.
Yeah.
Because the Cobras were the 427s.
Right, but I remember the 427, which reminded me of the Cobra, which, of course, Shelby was very famous for. So we only have 3 more minutes before spoilers.
And
I do want to say to everyone listening, all three people listening, and the dogs. If you don't,
one of which is Paul Shin, by the way.
Oh, well, yeah. Shout out Paul Shin. Shout out to Paul Shin because
thank you
for
helping us with the Model A recently.
Oh my
gosh! Running?
Yes, absolutely.
Our personal Model A.
Yes, big time. In fact, we just took that to a car show, which was a lot of
fun. Oh yeah, we took it to its first car show of the season, which was great. Everyone loved it.
So much fun to do that. I love taking that to the car show.
Yeah.
Because We do a lot more. We're more theatrical than most people there.
Oh, most Model A owners, they set up a chair, they sit behind it.
Right.
And they don't talk to anyone else.
No.
It's the weirdest thing.
No, it's funny.
I mean, well, first of all, they're all, well, let's be honest here. The Model A club is going to be a lot smaller in 10 years than it is now. But
10, you're being generous. Sorry. Okay.
Yeah, well. No, we'll see. We'll
anyway,
see if they update their life alerts. But anyway,
they're the geriatric group.
Yeah,
but
geez.
Yeah. So
the tennis ball market in this community.
Yeah.
No, but what did you want to say before I shouted out Paul Shin?
No, what I was going to say about the fact that ours is more theatrical.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, and then I was going to say something else. But I just want to say to everyone, please watch this movie.
Oh,
If you haven't had a chance to watch Ford versus Ferrari, please watch this movie.
I would like to say on record.
Yeah.
That it is the best automotive movie of at least the last 10 years.
I would agree to you. Completely agree with you. Sometimes we totally disagree, but I completely agree with you on this.
I would say it's up there with the likes of Cars.
Yeah.
Pixar's Cars. Yes. Which we did an episode on, even though it is a kid's movie, it's not really a kid's movie.
Right. Yes.
I would say up there with the original Fast and Furious.
Oh, yeah. Heads and shoulders above.
As a film,
yeah,
it's not even in the same realm as Fast and Furious.
Yeah.
But in terms of, you do have to give points to them for cultural impact.
Oh, yes,
but as
definitely.
A film, if you're as like, oh, what's a better film? Ford versus Ferrari is a better film.
Yeah, absolutely. It definitely is.
Than anything.
And like I say, it is definitely one I do want to encourage people to watch it, because I was the one who was going, I don't know if I want to watch this.
Right.
Because I had been burned by other movies before.
Well, you were burned by Rush.
Oh, gosh.
Don't say even, movies. It was just the movie Rush, which I really liked.
I know, which you thought was awesome, and a lot of people really loved, and I'm sure a lot of people hate me for that.
Right. Yeah,
which is all right. You know, it's a lot of people hate me anyway. But anyway, no, I think that this, and so when I went into it, the reason why I was going to say that is because you might think, it's a racing movie. Any person, kid, man, woman, child, doesn't matter.
Yeah.
You're going to like this movie because of the wonderful story, and there's a lot of just layers of interesting things, and it's just great. So
it has been 10 minutes.
Yes,
it's been 10 minutes, so
spoilers
will ensue.
Ken Miles dies at the end.
Wow, you just blew out. You just blew out the speakers.
Sorry to
every
the Kia
car.
Sorento owner
that
just blew out your speakers.
So you went to the biggest spoiler of the entire
movie. Oh yeah, 100%.
Wow.
I was not sure that I knew going into it. I knew that he died in real life testing next year's car. Mm-hmm. I did not know that they were going to put it into the movie.
Oh, really?
So, so I'm sitting in the theater. And I was like, man, like, because, okay. So I went to go see this movie in the theater when it first came out with two people who are not car enthusiasts. Probably the farthest things from
which
car
is awesome.
Enthusiasts ever.
Which is awesome.
And I was thinking when the movie was about to end, I was like, oh, you know, I'm going to have to explain to them that Ken Miles died, like, right after the events of this movie.
Yeah.
And then they actually ended up showing it.
Gotcha,
it was actually part of the movie.
Yes.
Which was interesting.
It was.
But again, going off of how great the movie is, the two non-car enthusiasts absolutely loved the movie.
Yeah, which I think is a
great storytelling and
great testament to an actual movie. To me, this was, I felt like, hey, Ronnie Howard, the movie Rush, this is how you make a car movie. This is how you do it.
I'm very curious to see if your hatred of Rush is your hatred of
I mean, I make fun of
that movie, or I wonder if you hate F1.
I don't hate F1. I don't hate F1. I don't hate. I actually don't really hate Rush. It's just a joke. It's just to make fun of it.
You kind of do though. Every joke has a little bit of a silver lining.
I mean, there is obviously. I didn't like the movie. But the reason why I didn't like the movie, and the reason why I think maybe because I like this movie so much, is because in the first, okay, good example.
Mm-hmm.
In Rush, in the movie Rush, the guy gets into a fiery, hideous accident.
Mm-hmm.
I could care. I couldn't, could not care less.
Yeah.
Because of how they built the character.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, yeah, whatever. He just died in a fiery crash or something. That's whatever. Now, even the first accident that Ken Miles is in, where he's in a fiery crash, I was like, oh no, get out of the car. No. That's how I felt because they built the character to be affable, to be likable, to be this person. I think it's Blake Snyder wrote the book Save the Cat, and it's a book about making movies where you need to have some connection with the viewer and the hero.
Right.
So that's what was so great about this movie is there were so many characters, but the characters were like perfectly set up. You knew who the quote unquote good guys and bad guys were.
Right.
And there were many levels of bad guys in this movie.
Which, yeah, I was going to say, very interesting. I don't know if I would qualify Ferrari as the bad guy.
No, I get what you're saying. Yeah. What I'm
saying
is that
in the movie realm, they were the bad guys. But, okay. like, Ford itself, I feel like, was they were bad guys.
Yes.
I mean, they were actually, the antagonists, at least.
Right. And when I say bad guys, I'm, you know, right. obviously it's the antagonists. It's the people that are trying to stop the other people from getting to their goal. There's lots, and usually in good movies, there's lots of different antagonists. There's varying degrees. Yes, varying yeah. degrees. So you had, even on Carroll Shelby's team,
mm-hmm.
there was that one main... I can't remember his name. The one main maintenance guy.
Oh, yeah, the older guy.
The older guy yeah. who was basically like, wah, wah. He was kind of like the, all right, you want to do this? You're pushing it too fast, and you're doing this.
Yeah.
Kind of the grumpy old
yeah.
worker. But not a mean person, but kind of a downer guy. And
just
kind
a speed bump rather than a stop
yes,
sign.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. Very good way to put it. So, yeah. In my world, a semicolon instead of a period. So that's
you're writing life. Okay.
So, what you have with this movie is layers of different people at different levels of antagonism to the heroes, and even the heroes themselves, the two main people. I love the fact that they made this kind of almost a playful hatred between Carroll Shelby and Ken Miles.
Oh, yeah.
Which was great yeah. and very realistic. If you would have, I think it made me feel like Ken Miles was a much more realistic character, even though, like you would say, okay, he was a jerk. He could be a jerk.
Oh, yeah, 100%. Yeah.
And I get that, but they still gave him some qualities like being such a great dad. And being, yeah. you know, such a, you know, in other ways, being a good husband.
I wonder if
like
today he would be diagnosed with bipolar. Because
oh,
it almost came off as that.
Yeah, they, yeah
I mean, he
you're
had
right.
like
it's
this
very...
spark anger,
right.
but also he was singing H-A-P-P-Y.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And like,
yeah.
you know, in the car, like yeah. 30 seconds later.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm
it's
very
yes.
dynamic character, very different character.
Very different.
And someone that I didn't fully love, I didn't fully hate.
Yes.
In the
right.
best way possible. In the
right.
best way possible.
Right.
Not in, like, I didn't care.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, this guy's kind of a loose cannon, and he felt very real, too.
He felt, yeah, his character felt very real. I love the fact that they played up his family.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could tell when it came to cars, he was kind of a different person.
Mm-hmm.
But then when he's sitting down with his son and showing him the curves and showing him the track and showing
yeah.
him how to do things, or when he was dealing with his wife and trying to make his wife happy and be a good father and be responsible, you saw a different side of him than you did when he was on the track. And when he was on the track, he could be a real bastard.
Oh, yeah.
Which is exactly how I would think that most of these drivers would be. So I think, so in that respect, I think that if Rush would have toned down the characters a little bit,
mm-hmm.
and you would have seen maybe not a ton, but a hint somewhere
yeah.
in there
yeah.
that those two guys in Rush were more realistic people, that they were just so out there. And that's what, to me, threw me way off. I was like, well, there's no likable qualities at all. This is the guy in the grocery store that I don't like.
Right.
Who's annoying. So I don't care what happens to him. But in this movie, very different. I laughed out loud in mm-hmm. this movie. There were certain points that I laughed out loud to. There were certain points or parts in this movie that I actually was very weepy, that I was like,
oh,
oh
yeah.
my gosh.
Towards the end, I
yeah.
cried a little at
oh,
the end.
I did.
And this
yeah,
is
I
my
cried
second
a little
viewing
too.
Of it.
Yeah.
So
I just, because it was so, I mean, like, and those points were so well timed.
Yeah.
You know, and love the fact that they took out Henry Ford II in the car. And he's crying in the car. He's like, yeah, I was born ready.
Yeah, that name is on the steering wheel.
Right. And
which we'll
get
into Henry Ford the second. That
yes, yeah, we job. Will. But the you know, the acting was awesome. Christian Bale, boy, he lost a lot of weight. We talked about it.
Well, you know what's interesting
yeah.
is that he was coming off the movie Vice when filming this.
Oh.
Where he played Dick Cheney and was
no.
almost 300 pounds.
No.
He literally yeah. didn't eat.
Wow.
In between that role and this one to yeah. lose that much weight. I think he ended up losing like 80 or 90 pounds in yeah. the 6 months.
It's
to yeah.
Yeah, it would be amazing because he looked really gaunt and then they put very loose clothes on him. So I believe, because at the end they have a quick picture of Ken
yeah.
Miles. Which I love the fact both Rush and Ford versus Ferrari, they both put the real people, images of the real people at the end, which I thought was great on
right,
both
yeah.
movies. I thought I really appreciated that on both. But again, and we'll talk about this too, I think, a little bit, is there were certain things that were done for the cinematic effect of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So really, there were certain things that maybe didn't happen, but made the movie more interesting in the way that they put it together.
From everything I've heard.
Yeah.
Everything crucial and important.
Yeah.
Happened.
Okay.
Like the door not closing on the GT40.
Really?
That was
real. Okay. All right.
The door wouldn't close. That was back in the day when they used to do running starts to
yes.
to start races.
Which was, I had forgotten about that.
Yeah.
And I was actually nervous for him.
Yeah.
Because first of all, I am like the world's worst runner ever.
Oh, yeah.
So if I had to run out to the car, that would suck.
Yeah.
I would be like, oh no, I can't run. But yeah, running out to the car was pretty crazy.
Which is total offshoot.
Yeah.
The reason why, if you've ever driven a Porsche, their
yep.
keys are on the left.
The
key is on the left side of the steering wheel, because the theory is it comes from racing in the 50s.
Okay.
You can be doing your seatbelt with your right hand and starting the car with your left.
Oh.
Because traditionally,
could be,
the
yeah.
keys found on the right side of the steering wheel, you'd buckle, then key in, or vice versa.
Okay.
Well,
so, I mean, that's if it's not true, it's a cool story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least it sounds legit.
Yeah, exactly. So, okay, yeah.
One thing I did want to mention, totally breezed
yep.
over it when we talked about the car.
Yeah.
In 2018, a Mark II GT40 that actually came third in the Le Mans race in 1966
yeah.
was sold by R.M. Southby?
Sotheby's?
It's sold for
Sotheby's?
$9.75 million. So almost
wow.
$10 million, the third place car recently sold in 2018.
Wow.
For almost $10 million. Which it's the most expensive Ford GT sold. Not the most expensive car, but
yeah.
As a Ferrari 250 GT, I think that went for $25 million.
Wow.
Well,
the Ford GT,
so
I mean, yeah, that what, GT40?
GT40. The 40 comes from it was 40 inches tall.
Yeah, which is explained in the
right,
movie.
Right, yeah, which
by,
is really, really
by,
cool.
That
was
Ken
always
Miles
like a big,
yeah.
like a car guy thing.
Oh,
knowing
yeah.
that. Like,
oh,
you know
yeah.
where the 40 comes from?
Yeah.
20 inches tall?
Well, same thing, though, with some other cars. And I remember in mechanics school, they were telling us, yeah, the 386 came from, it took 386 steps to get from the guy's office to the floor of the
interesting.
So those things that they kind of just
yeah,
throw in
most
time
or more often than not, the digits are like engine displacement.
Right, exactly. Yes,
BMW
most
used to
likely.
Be great at this, but now
yeah.
BMW just gave up on that.
Did they?
So, yeah, so like a 330 comes with a 2 liter.
Okay.
Where the 330
sure.
used to come with a 3 liter.
I see that totally. I don't
yeah.
understand why.
The 318s came with 1.8
yeah.
liters. Anyway.
Yeah, okay.
But
yeah,
yeah,
that's
I just want to mention that.
Again, cool car, though. And I'm so
super
glad
cool
that you
car.
Explained that, because I didn't realize all of a sudden there was this cool racing car that had been delivered on an airplane.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
Yeah,
where the
like,
heck
oh,
did that come
well,
from?
They said in the movie, they're like, oh, we shipped it over from Europe.
Yes, they did. Right.
And I got to thinking, I was like, did they, like, did they develop it in Europe? Right. Or like, well, do you remember when we went to the Simpsons table read?
Yes.
And they told us that they make up like every like 1 second of the animation, and then they just send it off to like,
Korea
or Japan.
Yeah, they
and
do
they
the
actually do the animation.
Yes, they do the keyframes.
Right.
So they do like every couple of seconds or whatever of keyframes, and then the in betweens.
Company and I think it's Korea, right?
Yeah, Korea, and then
Korea just fills in.
They literally
animate between the frames.
Right. Exactly. So,
so
they,
I was wondering if maybe. I don't know, someone in Europe, they had like a quick shop that just like threw something to get like,
right,
you know, they're
yeah,
like, hey,
yeah.
we need a chassis.
Right.
And then they're like, boop, boop, boop. You know, like the Amish building barns.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
Because the Amish are really into racing. Anyway, yes.
Well, actually, I was at Colorado National Monument the other day.
Yeah.
And before flying to France. And
right.
a bus full of Amish people got out.
Yeah. Is that a joke, or is that...
No, that's real. It was a bus full of Amish people.
Okay, they walked into a bar and then...
Yeah, it sounds like the setup to a joke, but it's
not. It does,
not.
But then, wow. Okay, all right.
Couple interesting points I want to talk about with the movie.
Yes.
A couple of my favorite scenes.
Yes.
The 7,000 RPM speech at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
Is amazing.
That's where I was watching and you had come down at during the...
Oh, my, like...
And I was going to say something and then you're like, no, shh. You're like, shut up.
Yeah,
listen to
like,
this.
Shut up.
Shut your face, Dad. Listen to this.
At 7,000 RPM, the vehicle becomes weightless and you're just a being moving through time and space. I love that so much and it's literally giving me goosebumps now because that's the red line of my RX-7.
Is it?
Well,
7,
now
000?
With an ECU, it's like 8,200. But but the factory red line, my gauge goes to 7,000 RPM.
Yeah.
And there is just something about being on the limit when everything's working together.
Absolutely.
That you do lose your sense of being, and it's just you're just an object literally moving through time and space.
Yeah, you become weightless, and
it's just you're just going.
It is an incredible feeling.
Yeah,
there's no two ways about it.
Speed is an incredible feeling and has never killed anyone. It's the sudden, very sudden deceleration that usually tends to get people.
yes,
but
exactly,
I love that. Like, if it wasn't so like stupid, I would like have a T-shirt that says.
No,
that.
I totally get
that's
that.
That's so
yeah.
like
no.
Tumblr, so fetch. Like, oh my god,
it's
you know, like I'm a car enthusiast.
Bo Burnham recently did a special.
Oh, yeah. That's what I was like kind of channeling.
Exactly,
I've been listening
to
a lot of Bo Burnham recently.
Yeah, Bo Burnham.
Did you watch Inside?
I watched the entire Inside special.
Oh, what did you think? Side note.
This is a big side note. It was actually, I think, an incredible movie.
Yeah.
I think it was an incredible documentary to how a lot of people were feeling during the whole COVID period. And I think we will actually in the future be able to look back at that and go, if you want to know what it felt like, not the facts of it. If you want to know what it felt like to be in the pandemic, in the COVID, watch that special. You will get an insight like you have never had before. I thought it was pretty darn cool.
Go check it out. It's called Inside by Bo Burnham.
Yeah.
That's
a bonus
on Netflix.
Bonus feature to this podcast.
Which I think also I've been thinking about. I think for April Fools, I think we should both just pick a movie that's not a car movie and just do that. I mean, not like to surprise anyone.
No,
like you'll know about
it.
But I think for once a year,
it's a great idea. I think
we'll do non-car movies.
April Fools will be our non-car movie. But yeah, totally.
But Inside by Bo Burnham, it's his third special on Netflix besides What and Make Happy.
Mm-hmm.
It's comedy music. But also, this one is less comedy than the previous ones.
Less comedy. And
because it's not in front of an audience. It's self-produced. He's the only. He filmed it, edited, lit the whole thing himself.
Yeah.
Which I think the lighting is highly underrated.
Oh, yeah.
People kind of breeze over it. But the lighting is amazing for one guy.
He did an amazing job at putting things together. And he created so many different creative worlds. Using only like lighting effects.
Right.
And
it's all filmed in one room.
All filmed in one room.
Alone. Just a guy, a piano, a thousand mixers.
Yeah.
You see his room. I mean, it's just all on the floor. It's all the,
You would, if you watch this, it's pretty amazing about how he got creative It's not boring, but all done in one room. But he,
right,
the way that he mixed it together and the way that he edited it and he put together what he edited. That's a hard thing to say.
I know. I always say that. Edited. I just edited the video.
So, but the way he did it was really good. But I think for the most part, honestly, before we get back to the movie, was that it is a great look into the feelings of a lot of people during pandemic.
Yeah, it's a lot more serious. It does, it kind of does touch on mental illness a lot.
Yes, it does. Right.
With panic attacks and anxiety and things like that. Right. It doesn't really do it in the way of, like, I feel like a lot of modern culture, they're like, oh, you know, we need to address anxiety attacks. We need to address panic attacks. And I agree, but A, they never offer solutions.
Right.
And B, they never really show what it truly is. A lot of people talk.
Yes.
A lot of, I know probably every single person in my life that I've ever met has always been like, oh, I have such bad anxiety. But like until you have like an actual panic attack.
Yep.
It's very different.
It
like,
is.
Like because it actually becomes physical.
Mm-hmm.
I think I've only had one real panic attack.
Yeah.
And I was driving on the highway in my RX-7.
Okay.
And I couldn't see anymore. My vision
went
out. So I pulled over by O'Hare. I was on 355, I think.
Yeah.
I couldn't see anymore.
Well, that's frightening.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Especially in an 85 RX-7 with no airbags.
Yeah. Well, I say that too as your dad.
13B.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
I say that as your dad and as a human being.
Yeah.
That's
go check it out on Netflix, Inside by Bo Burnham.
So let's talk about Outside and
Outside
Ferrari
on the racetrack.
Right.
I thought something interesting they brought up is that Ken Miles won the Pikes Peak Hill Climb.
Oh, I didn't know that.
They briefly mentioned it, but I just got back from Pikes Peak.
Yeah.
And the people who race up Pikes Peak are insane. They are the smartest, stupidest human beings. I drove up in my Mazda 3 full of airbags. You know, it has
great car. Shout out to Mazda 3.
Shout out to the Mazda 3. Yeah. Got the top safety pick for 2019
awesome
by the National Highway Association.
Yep.
Highway Safety Association. I drove up at maybe 15 to 20 miles an hour, and it was terrifying.
Terrifying.
And the sign going up there says that they reach speeds of up to 120 miles an hour when going up the hill. I did it. I did the hill climb in about 35 minutes.
Yeah.
The record is 7 minutes. Which is,
oh my gosh,
blindingly insane.
That's insane.
The sign said like at most a good fast time is 10 minutes.
Right.
With I think it was actually a Volkswagen Scirocco or something, or a modified Golf.
Really?
Actually has the world record of 7 minutes.
Well,
7:35 or something. But anyway, I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah,
that
because we just got back from doing the Appalachian Trail, and you talk about scary hairpin turns through the middle of nowhere, awful time going through there.
Yeah.
And I cannot imagine, even though the locals, because they knew it very well, the locals would go flying around.
Yeah.
And I guess if you knew something really well, you could do it.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it was... It
says a lot to Ken Miles to be able to do
that. Yeah, that was my end point, is that now after driving up Pikes Peak, I have immense respect for this guy for living life on the edge like that, because there are no guardrails up there.
Yeah.
At the top, you get up to 14,000 feet.
That's a...
I mean,
even
my car was struggling for air.
Yeah.
I mean, like, oxygen is so thin.
Yeah.
It's really, really cool.
So you're right. It is a big thing for Ken Miles to be able to do that. Yeah.
The other part I loved was the 7,000 go like hell sign.
Oh, yeah.
Which
was
we've actually done on the racetrack. We were joking about that with Adam, and we made a sign that said 7,000 go like hell, because that's what our Miata revs to. Just such a cool, like, screw you, stick it to the man moment.
Exactly.
Where you're like, because it was right before that, there was the spokesperson for Ford.
Yeah.
And he was like, we decide the RPMs.
Right.
We decide the drivers. We are overseeing everything. And it's really wasn't the case. So sort of a stick it to the man moment.
Right. Exactly. And I think that was one of the things, especially because that was a very crucial time in that movie for them to say, because if he had lost the race, Ken Miles would not have been able to drive in Le Mans, and
Ford would own
Ford would own Shelby,
which
so,
I think ended up happening anyway.
I think so too. I'm not sure.
I'm not sure the logistics of that, but he ended up doing a lot of stuff for Shelby.
Yeah,
and they still make the Shelby Mustang.
Yes,
so they must
yes.
own some type of the name.
I think they probably do. And you know, this made me this whole thing made me so much more appreciative of Carroll Shelby and the stuff he did, and his kind of. You know, cowboy kind of, you know, swagger and the whole thing of this. But I think they did a good job, too, of showing, without really showing it, that Carroll Shelby and Lee Iacocca were probably friends at some point.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the fact that Carroll Shelby, it looked like Lee Iacocca got Carroll Shelby and understood him a little bit more.
He had to play the game.
Yes.
Lee Iacocca, we'll talk about later, might be one of the smartest human beings in the world.
Really?
In the automotive world. Okay, maybe not IQ, but the guy was a hard worker and had ideas.
Yeah, which is great.
And he single-handedly pretty much saved all three of the large auto manufacturers.
Yes, that is true. I remember he was always a big icon.
Speaking of which, so this movie's obviously a historical movie.
Yep.
I have a bunch of info here on some of the characters, the real
versions. The real people. Okay. All right.
So, actually, I have a couple more notes here, and then we'll get into the people. I just wrote down Henry Ford II was terrible, because he was. And then quickly followed by, it just says, I misspelled it, but Lee Iacocca is great. I spelled it I-A-A-C-O-C-A.
That sounds like sounds like a movie report from a second grader.
Yeah. This weekend, I saw a Ford movie. Lee Iacocca, great. Henry Ford, terrible.
Right, exactly.
And then the last note I had was he noted that the idiotic three-speed in the Mustang. When they unveiled the Mustang,
right.
He's like, get rid of the idiotic three-speed.
Yeah.
So I've actually driven a first-year Mustang.
Oh,
with
wow.
the straight six and the idiotic three-speed.
Really?
I
didn't know
it's just called the three-speed.
Okay. Is it three on the tree?
No.
Okay.
But it's almost identical to our Model A. There's there's a synchro between second and third gear, but there's no synchro for first gear.
Oh.
So when you're coming from a stop, it usually grinds.
Okay.
And then it's also, again, like our Model A, it's a dog leg.
Okay.
So left and back is first gear. Then second and third gear.
Left and back. Okay, yeah.
It's a terrible transmission.
Is it?
Especially in a car that's trying to be sporty. Mm-hmm. I mean, our Model A is the furthest thing from sporty.
Right.
You try to really shift that thing.
Yeah, you can't.
And you get punished.
You do, big time, yeah.
You get punished. Yeah. So I have a whole write-up here. I sort of dive into Ford's heritage.
Oh,
people not even in this movie.
Wow. Okay.
But Henry,
we're gonna diss people.
We're gonna end up talking about Queen Mary or something.
Right. Okay.
But
all right.
So Henry Ford II was not the son of Henry Ford. That was his grandfather.
Oh.
Henry Ford II was the son of Edsel Ford.
Really?
Yeah, so we'll get into that in a second.
Okay, yeah.
So we're going to talk about Edsel Ford for a little bit. Edsel Ford was the president of the Ford Motor Company from 1919 until 1943 when he unfortunately passed away from stomach cancer at age 49.
Wow.
And he actually died while being the president of Ford. He married, so this is still Edsel. Edsel married Eleanor Lothian Clay, who was the niece of J.L. Hudson.
Oh, no. Really?
Of Hudson Motors.
Of Hudson Motors. Wow.
So her uncle started Hudson Motors.
Really?
Which ended up being a huge competitor, obviously, to Ford.
Big time.
So I thought that was just kind of funny.
Okay, that is funny, yeah.
So Edsel pushed for change in 1919 to produce a new vehicle. They only made the Model T.
Okay.
But Henry Ford kept saying no until he ended up finally listening to Edsel, and they formed the Model A in 1928. So Edsel pushed for the Model A.
Wow.
Henry Ford gets renowned as this savior, this huge, huge name in automotive. He invented the assembly line. That's about it. And then hated Jews. But other than that.
that's enough to, like, just say
right.
bad person.
He was pen pals with Hitler. Him and Walt Disney were great.
Okay. No shout out.
Yeah, no shout out to Henry Ford, honestly. But yeah, he was a stickler for change. He didn't want to change. The Model T, I mean, they sold 4 million Model A's. They sold in the double-digit millions of Model T's.
Did they really?
Yes.
Okay.
They made it from, I believe, 1909 till the mid-20s.
Yeah.
I mean, it was this long-lasting car. And you know, they're still around today. Like, you know, they hold up.
Definitely
they're well-built cars.
Yeah, but so are Model A's.
So are Model A's. But he did not want to change. And so it was actually Edsel Ford that got him to finally change
and
produce our car, the Model A, which is kind of a cool piece of history.
Cool. Yeah.
He also advocated for the purchase of Lincoln in 1922. So Ford Motor Company bought Lincoln Motors.
Yeah.
And he was in charge of creating the Lincoln Zephyr and the Lincoln Continental.
Okay,
so the Continental, huge car. In name recognition and size. Literal size.
Yeah.
The only reason I put in Lincoln Zephyr is that literally this morning I found out that grandma, my grandma.
Your grandma.
So your wife's mom.
My mother-in-law.
Your mother-in-law.
Yeah.
That's the better word for it.
Yes, my mother-in-law.
That's the term for it. Geez, this is a long one. Your mother-in-law's mother. So my great-grandmother had a Lincoln Zephyr.
Oh, okay.
That they used to take on road trips and stuff.
Okay.
We were talking about my Colorado trip. There's a long way of saying that, but that's why.
My second cousin's brother's girlfriends. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So, I seem to have highlighted my Google Doc, and it will not let me unhighlight. So that's super
sick.
Okay.
Well, that's great. Appreciate that.
He also helped introduce hydraulic brakes to Ford.
Nice.
By modernizing.
Nice.
Edsel Ford really pushed for modernizing, which is cool.
Yeah, that is cool.
This is also an interesting part. So he died at only 49.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Which is terrible. But after his death, Henry Ford, the original, took back over the presidency of Ford from 1943 till 1945.
Okay, for a couple
because
of years.
Because Henry Ford II was actually in the Navy and was actually deployed, obviously.
Okay.
In 1943, we were doing things in Europe at the time. So,
Right,
Nazis. Maybe we're doing Glorious Bastards. Maybe that'll be our
We might. There was a couple cars in there, though. I don't know.
There's some Jeeps, maybe.
Some Jeeps.
Do we have to pick movies that absolutely have zero cars?
No, I don't think
we can.
I
only
think
do
could...
A Bug's Life and
I don't even know.
No, in The Bug's Life, there's the Pizza Planet truck.
You'd have to do like, some crazy prehistoric. Maybe Finding
Nemo.
No, there's some because
they roll across the highway.
Yeah, they do.
Because again, you see the Pizza Planet truck.
Yes.
The Pizza Planet truck has been in like every Pixar movie,
which
ever.
Is awesome.
Anyway, getting back
shout
to
out to Pixar.
Yeah,
love Pixar.
Shout out Pixar. Yeah. Henry Ford II took presidency, or I say presidency, ownership, CEO, whatever, main guy of Ford.
Main dude.
From 1945 until 1960.
Oh.
And then, which this is just an interesting side part. He was followed. So when Henry Ford II was no longer the CEO, he was followed by Robert McNamara.
Oh.
Who would later go on a year later to be the Secretary of Defense for President Kennedy.
Yeah, that sounded really familiar when you said,
It's so funny because if you ever played the original Call of Duty Black Ops, there was a Nazi zombie.
Which I did every day.
Yeah, of course.
No.
There was a level where you remember fighting the zombie games.
Oh, yeah.
There was
you and I did that. We had a lot of fun, yeah.
There was a level called 5, which was in the Pentagon, and you could play as Kennedy, Fidel Castro...
Okay.
Someone else, and then Robert McNamara.
Really?
So you can actually play him in a video game fighting zombies, which is pretty funny. Total offshoot. So this is more on Henry Ford II.
Yeah, okay.
This is directly pulled from his Wikipedia. Henry Ford II was serving in the Navy and unable to take over the presidency of the family-owned business. The elderly and ailing Henry Ford I, company founder, resumed the presidency. And this is the interesting part. Though mentally inconsistent, suspicious, and considered no longer fit for presidency position by most of the company's directors. So,
That's possible he could have been kicked out. I mean, if he didn't have like ownership, if he didn't have like a certain percentage of ownership, the board could kick you out. Ford kicked out CEO. So
I just find it interesting that Henry Ford then took back over the presidency for like, it was like a year and a half or something.
Yeah.
While Henry Ford II got back from war. Mm-hmm. Which it then says here, Henry Ford II received little grooming for the position, and he took over the company during a chaotic period. Its European factories had suffered a great deal of damage during the war, and domestic sales were also in decline. So I thought that was interesting. I still hate Henry Ford II with a passion, but it's interesting. He took over this company literally like while the war was ending.
Yeah.
In sort of a chaotic time, and it said that he didn't really know what he was doing.
He
didn't work his way up the ranks. He wasn't in sales. He wasn't in marketing. He was literally came back from war and is now the CEO of the largest auto manufacturer in the U.S.
Okay, that makes sense then. I mean, you know, I obviously in this movie, especially the character in this movie of Henry Ford II was awful. I mean, mm-hmm. It was a terrible person. I don't give him any props. But to the actual person, Henry Ford II, I could see that where he was just kind of thrown into this and was trying to figure it out. Plus, what you're saying makes a lot more sense when he talks about going to war.
Right.
You know, okay.
Yeah. I do love that part of the movie, and I think that's the one redeeming quote from Henry Ford II.
Yeah.
So he's like, in the Second World War, we built the bombers that. Right. Which is true. Ford did build the airplanes that ended up fighting the Nazis and beating the Nazis.
Yeah.
And so when he's looking out the window and he says, you know, Shelby, go to war.
Yeah.
We've been to war before. We'll go to war again.
Yeah.
I thought that was a really cool scene. Two things from Henry Ford II. So I thought this was kind of funny. And again, I want to say that I'm using the wording from Wikipedia and also the wording from Henry Ford II. These are not my own words. In 1973 and 1974, as it became clear that the American car market would begin to favor smaller, more fuel-efficient cars, Ford's then-president Lee Iacocca was highly interested in buying powertrains from the Honda Motor Company as a way to minimize costs of developing a small Ford car for the North America, such as a modified version of Ford Europe's Ford Fiesta. The plan was rejected by Henry Ford II, who stated, and again, these are Henry Ford II's words, "No car with my name on the hood is going to have a Jap engine inside."
Wow. Okay.
Go. Okay. And then it goes on. Although strictly speaking, it was technically too late for that, since the Ford Motor Company had been selling a Mazda compact pickup truck as the Ford Courier since 1971.
Oh, there you go.
So he says, "I won't have a Japanese engine in my cars," when he's literally been doing that for 2 years at that point. It goes on with Ford's relationship with Mazda, which is interesting. And then last thing about Henry Ford II. Henry Ford II was the head of the Edsel brand for its very short life.
Okay.
1958 to 1960, and it was named after his late father.
Which we saw an Edsel at the car
show.
It was
two cars down from us, which is cool. It was a Ford pickup truck, our Model A, and the Edsel all together.
Which I didn't know the connection, so that's kind of cool.
I knew that I had always heard that Edsel was named after Ford's son.
Okay.
I didn't know that it was after his passing, because remember, he passed in 1943.
Right.
Edsel was a thing in 58 to 60.
Okay.
Only two model years.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I thought that was interesting. So Henry Ford II wasn't really a good guy. He's not really accredited with much besides the Ford Mustang.
Yeah.
He was around for the Ford Mustang. He didn't really do much.
Yeah, you could kind of tell that from this movie too, where it was kind of he had a certain style. Let's just put it that way.
I do appreciate his appearance in the movie.
Yeah.
I think they did a really good job of making him this sort of big bulldog looking guy.
Yes.
I always remember in film class in high school, we talked about The Godfather and how they were trying to make Marlon Brando literally look like a bulldog.
Yeah.
They were trying to do the big droopy cheeks like a bulldog, and I always think of that.
Yeah. I mean, that is and it's something you don't think about too much, but in movies, when you are trying to get people to think a certain way about a character, you do things like that are subtle. that, you know, make them feel a certain way just by looks. But
so, and the reason I say he didn't really do that much is because now we're going to get into Lee Iacocca.
Okay. All
and
right.
This guy's track record is insane.
Okay.
So Lee Iacocca, who in this movie is one of the representatives of Ford.
Yes.
He started off in just the marketing department of Ford. He came up with the 56 for 56. I don't know if you've ever heard of that.
No.
Not a predecessor to the 4 for 4 from Wendy's. But the 56 for 56 was the
delicious
fact that...
Shout out to Wendy's.
Shout out to Wendy's. The 4 for 4 has changed my life.
Yeah.
The 56 for 56 campaign from Ford was in 1956. Their slogan was, you can own a 56 Ford for $56 a month.
Oh,
it was
gotcha.
Like 21 months or something.
Okay. Yeah.
That got him recognition within the company, and then they, I think he was out in Pennsylvania. They took him in at Dearborn, and he quickly worked his way up the ranks in Ford. Yeah. He became the president of Ford in 1970.
Yeah, which is cool. Yeah.
Which is cool. I believe he was the second president to be outside of the Ford family.
Oh, okay.
Or no, third, because there's McNamara, some other guy, and then Iacocca.
Yeah.
Lee Iacocca helped develop the Ford Mustang, the Lincoln Continental Mark III, the Ford Escort, reviving the Mercury brand.
Oh, okay.
He introduced the Grand Marquis and the Mercury Cougar.
Oh, yeah. Those Mercury Cougar, that was a big hot car. That was, yes, that was a big deal.
As well as the Ford Pinto.
Okay, well.
Which he went under fire for and was subsequently actually removed from Ford after the Pinto dilemma where they would blow up.
Yeah.
Which really only happened like 8 times, I think.
Yeah.
It's a very small number of cars that actually blew up.
Yeah.
But it was enough to garner attention and the sales stopped.
Yeah.
But he did not stop there. He left Ford, well, not on his own will.
Yeah.
But he left Ford and went to Chrysler. Where at Chrysler, he developed the Dodge Omni and Plymouth Horizon. I don't know if you remember the Dodge Omnis.
Oh, definitely. Little hatchbacks. Yes, absolutely. That was very successful.
Iacocca is very smart. He knew that small cars, small efficient cars were the way to go.
Yeah.
The biggest thing, in my opinion, is that he invented the K car.
Yes.
Now, the K car is, well, the K platform is a front-wheel drive, front-engined, little chassis. And they made everything off of this one chassis.
Okay.
So they made, is it Plymouth Reliant, Chrysler Reliance, the Dodge 400?
Well, they definitely did
the Dodge
Diplomat.
600, the Diplomat.
Yeah.
The Chrysler LeBaron.
Yeah.
All of these cars were built off the exact same platform. So when Chrysler owed the government a lot of money because they were bailed out in the 80s. In the early 80s, they were bailed out. They owed the government millions.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that they paid them back was selling these cars because they would just build one platform and just put a different body on each of them.
Gotcha.
They made a minivan that was off the K platform. They made small cars, sedans, coupes, convertibles, all built off of 90% the same parts, but they looked like different cars and they sold them at different price points.
Yeah. Now, that's interesting because obviously that was their plan.
Yeah.
Was to be able to offer a huge line from just the same platform so you could slap on different bodies.
Yeah, it saved them millions. It's like instead of offering... Well, have you ever been to Raising Cane's?
No.
The chicken place?
No.
So Raising Cane's has 4 things on their menu.
Oh, okay.
They have chicken tender like meals.
Okay.
And then chicken sandwich meals.
Okay.
The chicken sandwiches are literally 3 tenders on bread.
Yeah. Okay.
It sounds stupid.
Yeah.
But people still have a choice. People love having a choice.
Yeah.
But the cost of... They just make chicken fingers. That's
it. Yeah, exactly.
They make 3 things, and they just arrange them in different ways, and they're highly profitable because, like, say McDonald's has, like, 80 different menu options, which is great, but... The overhead on that is way more than just having one thing.
Well, it's the same kind of idea with Taco Bell, the fact that there's only 4 or 5 different ingredients put together different ways.
Every few months, they just release a new shape, and then you're like, all right, cool. That's literally what Lee Iacocca got Chrysler to do.
Right, that's cool.
But he didn't stop there. He also introduced the minivan.
Did he?
He helped bring the minivan to market, which the Chrysler Town and Country is like, that's the minivan. That's like the original minivan. That's early 80s minivan.
Yeah.
Which
the,
started the minivan craze, which is really just starting to die out now.
Yeah. Which was the Dodge minivan back in the day?
Caravan?
It might have been the Caravan.
Yeah, the
Caravan. The Caravan was huge.
Again, same thing.
Right.
I don't know if they were built off K platforms or not. I can't remember.
But the Caravan, Dodge Caravan was like enormous.
The Caravan and the Town and Country, I don't know if it was actually called the Town and Country at that point, but they are responsible for starting the minivan craze that, like I said, no one, only like three or four manufacturers make minivans these days.
Yes.
But for probably a good 20, 30 years, minivans were the rage.
Well, they were taken over really by the SUVs.
Oh, yeah, because no one wants to look like a soccer mom.
Yeah.
But that, then if you try to get into the third row of an SUV, it's like trying to get into a metal box.
Well,
it's
the
worst
one.
Thing in the world.
We have
one,
the Pacifica, the third. And it's awesome when you have, you know, nine people or six people that you're trying to take somewhere. But, yeah, it is very difficult to do. And, yes, it would be a lot easier if you had a door that could open up and you could jump in the back.
Yeah, people who, if you have kids, you should not have anything else besides a minivan.
No, it doesn't make any sense.
Things that people don't ever think of, and I've said this in countless reviews, is the low loading floor of a minivan.
Yes.
When you are lifting a toddler up into the car with a car seat, do you want to lift him up 8 feet into your freaking lifted Yukon or the minivan? It's like a foot up, you're good.
Right,
they have tons of storage options. Most minivans come with vacuums built into them now.
Oh, that's true. Yes,
rear and they always have DVD systems and
well,
minivans are just better. They're just better, and your kid is not gonna ding the Porsche next to you when you
they're not gonna fling
a door open.
That's a huge deal, because so many times kids don't open the door. They kick the door open with
their foot. Yeah, because they're not strong enough.
Right, and so they kick the door open, and it goes flying into the car next to them.
Also, power doors. Most minivans have power doors these days, so push the button, door opens, so your little kid isn't kicking the door.
Right.
Anyway, minivans are just great. So that's
I think it's great.
Back to Lee Iacocca as well.
Oh, that's very, very cool that he did that.
And then one more thing he did is that he talked Chrysler into buying AMC. American Motor Company, which was like a American Motor Company we could spend hours on. It was basically a Hudson, Nash, a bunch of these old 50s companies that you've heard of, Packard, things like, I believe Packard. They all just formed American Motor Company.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh,
it was like
it
was like a couple getting together in a nursing home.
Yeah.
They didn't really have much else left.
Wow.
But they're like, let's just band together for these last couple
okay.
of years.
Wow.
Anyway,
it's a nice picture you paint there. Okay.
One of the brands that AMC encompassed was a little brand called Jeep.
Jeep. Yeah.
Ever heard of them? The only thing Chrysler is selling these days.
Yeah.
So Lee Iacocca talked him into buying AMC for the reason of getting Jeep, and he pushed for the Jeep Grand Cherokee.
Ah.
He said, we take this rugged name, we give it to a SUV that the average person could buy, because back then, Jeeps were glorified tractors.
Right.
They still kind of are, but less so. So it wasn't until his last year he was there, 1993, actually the year prior, 1992, they released the Jeep Cherokee, which was like the thing that he was trying to get them to do for so long.
Yeah.
And the Jeep Grand Cherokee is still one of the best-selling SUVs now.
Wow.
So that was all thanks to Lee Iacocca. And sadly, he passed away in 2019.
Yeah, I was going to ask if he was
sadly,
still around,
4 months before the movie came out.
Ah, no.
But I do want to say, if they made a spin-off movie or a sequel movie, not even anything to do with it, but just with Lee Iacocca played by John, was it Bernthal?
Bernthal, I think so.
I would watch it 100%.
Yeah.
I think he killed the role. It was fantastic, and I would love to see him go on through the 70s, through the 80s, through the K car, through Chrysler's bankruptcy, and all this stuff.
Yeah, he was, I remember books written about him, Lee Iacocca.
Oh, he wrote some books, too, which I'd love to pick up.
Yeah, because that was a very, very important time in the history of the United States for cars.
Yeah.
I mean, just absolutely huge. And he made a lot of those changes.
Yeah.
He,
it was a fundamental change from, you know, you had the Lincolns of the late 70s, of which I just drove a couple months ago, 7.5 liter V8 making 160 horsepower. Huge cars making lazy 9 miles of the gallon, you know, things
that's
like that.
Interesting how that, okay.
He had that foresight in the early 70s, though. Yeah. He was trying to buy Honda Motors. Mm-hmm. Honda, in the 70s, no one.
Right.
But now Honda's probably one of the leading manufacturers, if
not the
leading.
Yeah.
He had that foresight in the 70s to buy stuff from them.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy just had like a sixth sense for the car markets and things like that.
Yeah.
So I'm really glad that he was in the movie.
Yes, definitely. So. Yeah, I agree. And I think, wasn't he the one in the movie that brought about the idea of buying Ferrari?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said that Ferrari's bankrupt and that they should buy him. And what he says in the movie, he's like James Bond doesn't drive a Ford.
Yeah.
Ford's not cool. It's not cool.
Right. Exactly.
So I thought that was cool. Do you have anything else you wanted to add before we get into trivia?
A couple of things that I thought were really cool in the movie.
Okay, yeah.
First of all, I thought that the little things that they allowed. Okay, number one, I did not know that. I did not know that Carroll Shelby was a race car driver.
Yes.
Did not know that. I'd always known him for the Cobra. That was it.
Of course, he was
a designer, you know. But he didn't know he was a driver, and so that gave him a tremendous insight, obviously, into that. What?
I just put two and two together in my head.
What's that? That's four.
So I was.
That's four.
Thank you.
okay.
I was just thinking of like what other Shelby cars there are. Like obviously the Shelby Cobra, Shelby Mustang.
Yeah.
Shelby did a Dodge Omni.
Did he?
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's right.
And now
that's
it makes
right.
sense.
I remember that. Okay. Yes.
After this movie and stuff.
Yeah.
He probably stayed close with Lee Iacocca until they both passed. I believe Shelby in like 2011, I think, died.
Okay.
2011, 2012. It might have been 2012. And then Lee Iacocca. They probably remained friends because now that makes sense that Shelby tuned. I believe it was a Dodge Omni.
Okay.
Maybe it's like a Dodge Colt or something. Some like little hatchback from.
I think it was the Colt.
Yeah.
That makes sense. The Shelby Colt.
The Plymouth Stealth? I don't know. Anyway, he did some Dodge products, which I always thought was so off brand for him.
Right.
He probably remained friends with Lee Iacocca.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Which would make a lot of sense, especially once you watch this movie, and you will watch this movie.
Yeah, you can tell Lee Iacocca is, he's down for it.
He's like, he's on their side, and that's a great thing, and they needed it to be that way, but also, he kind of got it. He kind of got the whole Shelby, he kind of got the whole Carroll Shelby thing and Ken Miles thing and letting them do their stuff, and he does give them warning. He gives them a little heads up when, you know, things are going to come down, like when Ford is going to come visit him.
Right. Yeah.
And you know, tell him that Ken Miles can't be in the race.
Right.
Car. So that was a whole interesting thing that they did. But one of the things that was fun was how they showed Carroll Shelby messing with the Italians,
with
the Ferrari.
Oh, with the stopwatches?
So he takes their stopwatches, which was awesome.
Hey, you guys want a stopwatch?
They're
Italian.
They're Italian. They're Italian. He goes, hey, you want a stopwatch? It's Italian. And then he throws an extra spare lug nut at the guy's foot.
Yeah.
And so he's wondering, like, is something wrong? Did we forget a lug nut somewhere? I mean, that kind of stuff messing with them was really cool. I think that was really fun.
I did love the little part, too, towards the end. I just remembered it now.
Yeah.
Where basically Ken Miles gets screwed out of the Triple Crown.
Yes.
By Ford. Whether that was intentional or not.
It's debatable. I mean,
but the moment where everyone's running to like the lead driver, whatever, McLaren or whoever.
Yeah, it was McLaren.
And Ken Miles is standing there and Enzo tips his hat to him.
Yes.
I think was a very cool moment.
Yes.
As a job well done.
Yeah.
You know, sort of the sportsmanship. I really
like
that moment.
I like that too. I thought it was fun. Obviously they had to put the Italians in the place of, oh, these are terrible people. We gotta try and beat them in the race. Although it's funny because Ford versus Ferrari, it's a great name, but it really is much more than that battle between the two companies. And it was, you know, it's interesting because here's the thing is that part of the way into the race, into the end of the race, and again, big spoiler alert, that the Ferrari that's in the lead blows up or gets in an accident. So you know they're going to beat Ferrari at that point. It's not even a surprise. And I guess most people who are aficionados would know that Ford beat Ferrari in the Le Mans in 1966?
Yeah.
Shout out to my birth year. Yeah. Anyway, so because
no, this was 66, not 36.
That is painful. I'm now 90 something. Anyway. Okay. But the thing was that they made Ferrari out to be these, you know, these nasty guys. Okay, everybody is, you know, you can paint people in different lights.
Right.
But that was a cool way to do it. The other thing that I thought was the little twerks. That's not even a word, twerks.
It is a word.
It is it?
It's shaking your butt. Oh. It's twerking. So, ready to go.
The tweaks and little things that they put into this movie were, I thought, excellent. Like when Carroll Shelby takes over landing the plane.
Oh, yeah.
Which I thought was actually pretty darn hilarious.
Yeah.
And then when he pulls up.
He was a pilot in the military, by the way. Carroll Shelby was.
Which totally made sense that you would be. And they were flying something probably that was the plane he was probably used to flying.
Yeah.
So he was the kind of guy who would have climbed into the cockpit and, let me land this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, for no other reason that he could.
Yeah.
You know. So that was kind of his swagger and his way to do it. But when he comes to a stop, did you notice he swerves to a stop like a car would?
Yeah.
And when I saw him do that, when I saw them do that, I was like, I laughed out loud. And I was like, wow, seriously, I laughed out loud. That is a cool moment.
Yeah.
Where he swerves to a stop in the airplane, you know?
Like
so
kicks the back end out a little
bit. Exactly.
Yeah.
Kicks the back end out. So things like that made that character of Carroll Shelby so much more real and so much. It really added a lot of spice to that particular character. A lot of things that they did with Ken Miles made me really, really feel good about. I love the fact that Ken Miles, they show this, I don't know if this actually happened, but Ken Miles and his wife get in an argument and she's driving.
Oh,
and
yeah, and
big
she starts
old,
swerving through traffic, the old country squire.
And they're making fun of, he makes fun of the country squire, you know, in the beginning when you first meet this wife. And she's swerving around and she's like, this is what we like, isn't it? The speed and all that. And he's like, please, slow down.
Yeah.
And then finally, It really gets your heart going because you're like, oh, my gosh, what's going to happen? They're going to get an accident. And then finally, she pulls off to the side of the road, and she's crying. She's, like, in tears and shouting at him.
Yeah.
And it was a very emotional scene, and it was very realistic for anybody who's married. Like,
oh, yeah.
Okay, we've got to talk about this. And then I love the fact that, you know, he's like, yeah, I didn't want to take this and blow. I haven't taken it yet. And they're offering me $200 a day.
Yeah.
Which is awesome because back then, $200 a day was
huge. I think it worked out to like $1,600 a day.
Yeah.
Now.
Right. Which would make total sense. And so she's like, are you serious? Like, are you crazy? You can't pass that up. And then the other part about it that I really liked about their marriage was when he was not allowed to go to that first race. And he was working on the car, and he was listening to the radio,
He
was like, in his head, he was trying to figure out things in his head about what he could fix or how he could be better. And then, while he's lonely, sitting there in this big airplane hangar trying to fix the car, his wife comes with dinner and some, you know, some beer because there's no champagne.
Yeah.
And she's, like, there for him, which was so cool to me that his wife was there for him, supporting him, even though he couldn't go to the race and all that. And, you know, it just really showed what a solid family he had.
Right.
So really cool. Those things added a lot to the movie, in my opinion. You knew that, again, this guy could totally be a jerk when it comes to race and stuff like that. But really, when it came to his family, decent guy.
Yeah.
Love the fact that he and Carroll Shelby are fighting and all the groceries are going all over.
Oh, yeah.
And his wife pulls out a lawn chair and starts reading a magazine because she's like, okay, seen this before.
They'll figure it out,
exactly. And she's like, I got to go to the grocery store and buy some bread and some ice cream because you guys messed it all up.
Yeah.
So,
that was
anyways,
a great scene.
So those were some really great little tweaks that they had done.
Little details that really make the movie feel full and flushed out.
Yep.
So, so we'll get on trivia. To a little bit of trivia, and then we'll get on our way.
Okay.
What are we at? What are we at?
We are at 108.
Oh, okay. Not bad.
So we're good.
So in preparation for his role, Christian Bale took racing driving lessons at Bondurant, High Performance Driving School. As it happened, the founder of the school had been a friend of Ken Miles.
Oh,
so in addition to the driving, Bale also got to hear stories of the 60s racing scene. Bale's instructor and the film's stunt coordinator, Robert Nagel, later stated, "He's hands down the best actor I've ever trained."
Wow.
About Christian Bale, which was very interesting.
A quick side note and that was, you had told me about the fact that it was a right-hand drive car with, what was it, a left-hand shift?
It was a right-hand drive car with a right-hand drive
shift.
So you actually, getting in the door, you had to step over the shifter.
Right.
Which is very interesting. And the Ford GT40 was like that. A couple other race cars have been like that.
Okay.
Not 100% sure of the reasoning. Okay. I know a lot of it was the fact that they were American drivers. Ken Mile was an American driver, but it was a European car.
Right.
So you're on the right-hand side, things like
that. But
that
was interesting when you told me that. I thought that was a really cool little thing.
Up next. Oh, by the way, these are brought to you by, but in no way sponsored by, IMDb.com. These are just pulled from the trivia section of the Ford vs. Ferrari page.
Yep.
In order to recreate the Le Mans circuit as it existed in the 1960s, the scenes taking place on the track had to be shot in 5 different locations.
Huh.
This proved a challenge in terms of the continuity, as not only the cars had to be correctly placed for each shot, but the weather had to be consistent as well. VFX was critical in fixing a variety of continuity issues, some of which were simple as adjusting the clocks to be the right time. So they would actually CGI VFX some of the clocks in the background, things like that.
Well, very funny, too. I actually stopped. I was watching the credits, the end credits.
Oh, yeah?
And I stopped the credits a couple times just to see, like, different people. And
yeah.
I'm one of the few people that actually likes to, and I watch the credits at the end of a movie. I'll sit there through the end. When I'm at a movie theater, I'll sit all the way through to the end of a movie and throughout the credits. But I noticed there was a ton of CGI people.
Oh, yeah.
Just like any movie nowadays. And I thought, this movie didn't seem like it had a lot of visual effects.
Yeah.
It didn't have a lot of CGI. And then I saw that all the CGI people, there was a ton of people and different companies that did CGI effects. And to their credit, because it didn't look like there was a lot of visual effects,
I didn't really notice
anything. I didn't notice them. And that is very cool when you don't notice the
I always think of that... or like really good CGI, I always think of the Truman Show.
Oh, right, yeah.
None of the buildings in the Truman Show had a second floor.
Oh, really?
Everything from the first floor up was all added in digitally.
Huh.
Because they actually filmed on a set because, you know, the Truman Show is a really interesting sort of movie about, you know, it basically this guy doesn't know he's lived his whole life on a soundstage.
I've never seen the whole movie, by the way.
Really?
I've seen bits and pieces of it.
It's on Amazon Prime. You should watch it.
I should watch it.
It's very interesting.
Yeah.
It's not like this whole, like, change your life, moment. But then if it, like, everyone in his life is an actor.
Yeah, I heard that it's actually a tragedy. They call it a tragedy. It's not like a comedy. It's not a straightforward movie. It's a tragedy.
I'd go with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So anyway, with CGI and stuff like that, if you don't notice it,
that's the best way.
That is the crowning achievement of a CGI effect is if it's not noticeable.
Also, one more thing I wanted to note is the fact that, excuse me, we're very burpy today.
Yeah.
Shout out Culver's. For lunch on our $1 million budget.
Well, it is Father's Day. Happy Father's Day. It's not Father's Day in September. But it is. Shout out to Dad.
So Le Mans used to be literally, it was, you know, you say road course, which is a track that's has a lot more turns, you know, and stuff like that. But this was legitimately a road. This is, they closed down a road once a year.
Cool. I didn't know that until this movie. And
so
they,
America up in Wisconsin was the same way.
Oh,
so Road America started off, they would just close down these farm roads
okay.
and have the track there. Okay. And then they ended up, you know, purchasing land and actually building a track to not have to shut down public roads. But it was cool when we did the Porsche experience. We got to drive the streets that were the original Road America.
Did you really?
Yeah, which was
cool. Oh, that's cool. Yeah.
But yeah, something that's kind of looked over and like you might see, oh, they're racing on like back roads. It's like, no, that was the racetrack.
That was one thing that was really, really excellent about the movie. And it was a great thing that they did was Matt Damon's character, Carroll Shelby, was able to, when he explained what the Le Mans was to Lee Iacocca, I think, his explanation of it made perfect sense, that this is not a regular race. This is like, this is brutal.
So
this is amazing.
The 24-hour Le Mans goes back to the 1920s. It's the longest running 24-hour race. And like, Le Mans
is still
just,
do it, right?
Yeah. It's August, well, it'll just pass when this episode comes out. It's like August 22nd this year.
But
it was great.
It was great.
It was bad.
I was.
We got to get all of our takes in.
I was so surprised.
I wasn't surprised at all. I was surprised.
I was not surprised.
Man, that turnout was good. I really loved it when one.
Insert
name
here.
It was a shame that
insert name
didn't win.
Right, exactly. Yes, again, for those of you that don't know, we pre-record.
We pre-record these
like months
ahead.
We're
busy, man.
Yeah, we got real lives.
There's things to do.
Anyway, so
next trivia fact. Next, I thought this was kind of interesting. Ford distanced themselves from the film before it was released over the portrayal of Leo Beebe as a villain. So Ford Motor Company didn't do anything to promote the movie.
Really?
Which I feel like this was a better help to Ford than tearing it
down. Oh, I think so. I think so. Yeah.
Because it shows that within the company there was these sort of mavericks.
Yeah.
Not shout out to the Ford Maverick. Which is a pickup truck now.
Yeah. Really?
Ooh, they're reintroducing the Maverick as a pickup truck. Okay. It's a hybrid-only pickup truck.
We had a Ford Maverick.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
But anyway. My parents
thought that was
kind
of interesting. Lee Iacocca died on July 2nd, 2019 at the age of 94, 4 months before the movie was released.
That's
sadly.
So sad, yeah.
Dan Gurney, who was one of the racing drivers in the film, was portrayed in this movie by his youngest son, Alex.
Oh, cool.
I love when movies do that.
Yeah.
I love when period pieces do that.
Yep.
One redeeming quality from Rush for you is that lot of the other drivers were played by the driver's kids.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Which
That's
is
great.
Super cool just because it keeps it like pretty historically accurate. Yeah. Like that bloodline, you know, maybe not the actual guy, but like the bloodline was there.
Yes,
you know,
exactly. I think that's
cool.
That's very cool. I love the movie Rush. Why do you keep saying that?
You hate it. I know you hate it.
Sorry.
While pitching his racing idea in 1963, Lee Iacocca notes that James Bond never drove or would never drive a Ford. Bond didn't drive a Mustang in Thunderball, but he rode in the passenger seat and later did drive a Ford product in Diamonds Are Forever.
Yes, exactly right. So, that's exactly right. And it was a Ford Mustang, wasn't it?
Yes, and also Ford ended up buying Aston Martin.
Oh,
so later
there you go.
The later Aston Martins were Fords.
So
the 90s Aston Martin Vantage.
Yeah.
Has the same interior door handles, literally the exact same part for part, same as the Mazda Miata. Because Ford also owned Mazda at the time.
Wow.
So
okay.
A little fun fact there for you. This one you'll really like.
Okay. There we go.
All of the scenes of the Daytona 24-hour race were filmed at Auto Club Speedway in Fontana, California.
Really?
That's where Seven Stock was.
Yes.
We were there.
That is so
Which is funny because this came out in early 2019.
Yeah.
Which means that they must have like just filmed in 2018 at the Auto Club Speedway when we were there September of 2018.
So that was the Daytona stuff that they were shooting? Where were they shooting again?
The Daytona scenes were actually filmed at Fontana Speedway.
Okay. All right.
This movie came out late 2019. Never mind.
Okay.
I think. Okay. Anyway.
But yeah, very they must cool have that we were there.
Been, yeah, they must have just been there.
We were there, yeah.
Matt Damon and Christian Bale agreed that the brawl between their respective characters was the most fun scene to film. Both have experience of extensively choreographed fight scenes.
They do, that's that, right.
Yeah, that yeah. take weeks yeah. to learn. So yes. it was a positive change that they only had to rehearse the brawl for 20 minutes and weren't required to make it look lethal. So they
yes,
they just
right.
they, it was literally just like kind of a scrimmage, like just kind of.
I did like that where it was more realistic, like they're pushing each other's faces and stuff. And
yeah,
it wasn't.
And
it was
heavy
more like
breathing, like yeah. a minute in. Yeah,
that is true. That's they were like exhausted, and then that I love the fact that he's like that thing that you do when you grab me under the armpit, and he names it, Carroll Shelby,
oh,
and like a
yeah,
name,
yeah.
And he laughs. He's
like you named
and
it.
And Ken yeah. Miller's like, you named that? And he's like, yeah, you like to call it the llama pinch or something yeah. like that. He's like, I can't believe you. And that to me was so awesome because it was so much more real than 99% of the
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, it felt
fights
very and, real. And,
yeah.
and
like yeah. these guys, yeah, they'd brawled before. They'd, you know, and that's more like it because in real life, you don't get off great swings or kicks or things like that. It's really like more hand to hand grunting.
Yeah.
You're out of breath in 30 seconds. And yeah, it's not. It's not
I don't have any more trivia.
Oh, okay. All right. So we're at 119. So
119
we're,
yeah, right there.
There yeah.
So what are your closing thoughts?
Closing thoughts. Loved the movie. Absolutely loved it. I mean, if it was on, I would stop. I would watch
yeah,
it. There's no two ways about it. Absolutely loved it. It is truly, I believe, one of my favorite movies now
yeah.
that I've ever seen. I mean, it really was that amazing to me that they did
I can't really think of many downsides of the film.
Not, I, you know, oh gosh, good, yeah, good point. I mean, even the way that they lightly peppered in the music where, you know, there was this, there was this.
It won an Oscar for soundtrack, by the way.
Did it?
Yeah.
It should have, because the way that they did it, the way they did the soundtrack, the other thing I really liked that probably no one in the world would ever think about, maybe you would, but I loved seeing all the scenes and then the background cars, all the 60s background
yes.
cars.
Yeah.
I was like, wow,
I am a smaller
cool
version
yet.
Of you, so it makes sense why I would like.
Well, it's true, though. I mean, to see that
the
in the
period correctness.
Yes.
Yeah. Seeing
period correctness.
You know, Ford Galaxy pull out in front of them and stuff
yes.
like that.
Products. Product place where
yes.
she's opening.
The old Cokes.
The old Cokes. She's opening the old magazine.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really like she wasn't. It wasn't like an National Enquirer that she was opening up or something.
Yeah,
it was actually period accurate and everything. The Wonder Bread I think they had was right. And
the slot cars at the beginning.
Yes, the slot cars.
I'm sure you loved that.
Yeah,
you know.
That was awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like, because I grew up with AFX slot cars, which were
right.
the best. So all of that stuff really, really added to it. They did an awesome job with it. To me, it was like one of those that they hit every point that a good movie should hit. Even if you don't like cars.
Right.
Even if you're not a race enthusiast, you would like this just from the humanity side of it. Just in the battle. Because here is a good point where you've got many different things going on. There's lots of drama and action. Lots of funny parts. I mean, there were at least a couple parts where I literally laughed out loud.
Yeah.
Where I was like, that caught me off guard, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's funny. And the way that they totally, bucked the system, you know, this giant Ford company.
Yeah, yeah.
And they kind of went in as Mavericks, and they were like, okay,
yeah.
this is what we're going to do. Just the way that, like, Carroll Shelby watched as the folders went from one hand to one hand to one hand.
That was a really cool scene, too, where
yeah.
he was like, sir, I watched that red folder touch four hands before it made it to yours.
Exactly.
That's the issue that we're having.
Exactly. They can't do it by committee, and then that leads them to that whole thing about, you know, going to war. So that, to me, those were great scenes where they made a lot of sense. And the other thing that I appreciate, it's really hard to explain, but it's the dialogue. The dialogue was really good, really spot on. You know, real life dialogue is like you and me talking. It's all over the place. It's not all scripted out. And all
right.
That. But dialogue that's done well gets the point across in a way that seems realistic. like those people would actually say those things.
Yeah.
Even though they're perfectly set.
Not like old Speed Racer. What? Nothing about.
Which is another one we'll talk about someday.
We always joke about the old Speed Racer cartoons because they were dubbed in English.
Yes.
They weren't originally made in English. Yeah. So sometimes their responses would be so fast and inhuman.
They would have to like cram everything into a small.
Because of the framing of it. So there's this one scene we laughed about for probably the last 10 years.
Yeah.
There's a scene where Speed Racer says, "What? Nothing pops." Like.
Well, because Speed Racer says, "Yeah, I really want to be a racer." And his dad, Pops Racer, says, "What?" And he says, "Oh, nothing pops." But.
Oh, yeah. That entire thing Pops happens. Says, "What?"
Right.
And then Speed Racer, it's like so
it's
fast.
It's so fast. Like in human. Like
I'm sure in Japanese, it's probably like one word. Right. That means like, "Oh, never mind." It's probably condensed into one word. But
exactly.
In English, it was, "Oh, nothing pops."
Oh, nothing
so
pops.
So he's like, "What?" It was like literally what? Oh, nothing pops. Yeah. Like it was like the response was like so fast.
It was so.
So it doesn't sound natural, but this movie did a great job at being
it
natural.
It did seem. I mean, again, from a dialogue standpoint, huge. I mean, that was amazing to me how good the dialogue was. You got the point across. You did it in a very realistic, sing-songy way, but. It wasn't how real life dialogue would normally go.
Yeah.
Like, you know, an argument that you have with your wife never goes
like
smooth like that. But the way that they did it was very realistic and very passionate. And it was like, okay, I get the point. This is a very difficult time for both of them in their lives. They just had their garage shut down by the IRS.
Yeah.
They're struggling. They're trying to make a life for themselves. So again, you know, shout out to the writers for writing.
Mm-hmm.
Also, the directors and the actors, a lot of people have, as far as dialogue, a lot of people have a lot of input during the way. The last thing that sometimes screenwriters, the last thing they write is dialogue because they know dialogue will be changed all the way up until the film is shot. So
even during shooting, an actor might ad lib something that's way better than anything you could have thought of.
Absolutely. And that's happened many, many times, but. That is one of the great things. So I kudos to everyone along the way to keeping the dialogue really good.
I always remember whenever I think of like dialogue scenes and stuff. You never watched Parks and Recreation, did you?
Clips and a little bit.
You
blah,
never
blah,
really
blah,
liked
blah.
It?
It's okay.
Chris Pratt's character, Andy.
Yeah.
He ad-libbed a scene where someone's going to the hospital or something or not feeling good. And he types into a computer. And he goes, "Leslie, I typed your symptoms into the computer, and it says you might have network connectivity problems." And it was just ad-libbed because the computer wasn't working. And all the writers hated it so much because they're like, that's the funniest line that no one could have written that. It was
Well, and that is true. That is actually what happens is a lot of times, especially when you have really good ad-libbers.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you go to like Talladega Nights, when you go and have a Will Ferrell and a John C. Reilly.
Today we'd like to talk to you about snow blindness. Right. It happens in cats. Yeah. All those ad-libbed ads at the end.
Well, yeah, but when you have that, you can write just basically the framework and you say, okay, this is a scene where this happens. And then you give them, because that's what those outtakes are. They literally let them go.
Yeah.
And they just start spewing stuff, and then the editor puts it all together. But that's a little bit easier to do, I think, in a comedy movie than if you're doing it in a serious drama like this. But, yeah, definitely dialogue is something a lot of people don't really understand how complicated it is and how difficult it is to write a good example is Frasier, the TV show Frasier.
Yes.
Well written.
Yeah.
Dialogue really well written. There's a couple other movies.
Arrested Development.
Arrested Development. Excellent.
I mean, just to keep up with how many inside jokes.
Right. Tons of inside
gags
jokes.
And I don't even know what you call it, but like Lucille, when she gets attacked by a
loose seal.
There's so many play on words.
Yep.
The Blue Man Group is not a depression group for men.
Right. I mean, it's, all of those things.
Yeah.
But it is something that, you know, writing in, and especially in dialogue, is something that's very, very difficult to do. And again, it's usually the last thing that a writer will write.
Right.
And when they're doing a screenplay, they have the plot points and they put together the scenes. but the dialogue. In fact, it's funny. I recently read the script for Mr. and Mrs. Smith, which is totally not a car movie.
You thought it was going to be.
I thought
totally
it was
going to
be a car movie.
Wasn't, yeah.
Because in that movie, it's so funny, in the screenplay, they talk a lot about this minivan and the features of the minivan and how it was so funny in the script. I was like, this is great, because they're like going over the fact that there were sliding doors on each side of the minivan.
Yeah.
And so at one point, the bad guys jump into the minivan and the good guys flip him right out the other side. And he's like, I didn't think these doors would be handy, but these doors are great. This is really wonderful. So to me, that was really cool. But again, reading the dialogue and reading that script and then actually watching the movie was two different things.
Right.
A lot of the stuff changed. There was some that was spot on from the script. And again, I don't know which version of the script, because scripts go through gazillions of versions before they make it to the actual. It was kind of a shooting script. So because they had camera directions in it. But the idea of that is, again, dialogue changes right to the end. And these guys did a great job with this.
I would love to take popular movies and shoot their first edit script.
Yeah.
Like, actually film and produce.
That would be
like
funny,
Like Ghostbusters taking the raw original script and just seeing how different of a movie it would have been.
It would have been very different, by the way. Ghostbusters would have been extremely different, yeah.
But speaking of which, we have a couple announcements before we get on our way. Yes. We'll start wrapping up here.
Yep.
So next week we'll have a regular episode for you guys.
Yes.
But then for all of the weekends in October, we are doing scary movies. We're doing scary car movies. Scary car movies. So we will, we'll announce those as we go.
Yes, we will.
We're still trying to finalize the list.
Yeah.
Of which ones we want to do and which ones
we'll
save.
Scary car movies. Scary car movies.
So if you think of a scary car movie, we'll probably do it, because I can't imagine there's too many.
Right. By the time you hear this, though, we'll have already decided.
Yeah, so don't actually put them in the comments, because we already chose them. So we don't want to listen to you. one more thing. Check us out on Spotify. We're on Spotify if you're not listening already. Or if you're on Spotify, check us out on YouTube. You get to see my cool cover art that I hand draw each time.
Yes, which is great.
So
Our
next movie.
Next movie.
I do have our next movie picked.
Is it not what I'm expecting?
I don't think you're expecting it.
Okay, all right.
It is a part two of this movie.
What? Did we see part one?
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
So it's a brother episode or sister episode to this one.
Okay.
Our next movie is Shelby American, which is a documentary about Carroll Shelby.
Oh, cool.
So it's all 60s footage. It's actual footage, interviews.
Okay. Yeah.
It's on Netflix, and the description was documentary on how Carroll Shelby went from a farmer to car manufacturer.
Nice. Cool.
So I was happy to hear that you were interested in Carroll Shelby.
Definitely.
And that's why we didn't really touch on much of his history in this one, because I figured it's on Netflix. I've always seen, you know, the thumbnail of it. I've never actually watched it. It could be good, could be bad. We might hate Carroll Shelby. We might love him more. I don't know.
Tune in next week to find out.
It'll be cool to see Matt Damon's portrayal and then see how accurate it was.
Really?
And we'll actually
I guarantee.
Good old boys.
So
things like that. So next week we are watching Shelby American.
Shelby American. American?
I think so. Shelby America. Just type in Shelby on Netflix. It'll pop up.
All right, we'll do.
But thank you guys so much for listening.
Yes,
hope you guys enjoyed it. Please go check out Ford versus Ferrari, and we'll catch you next episode.
All right, bye-bye.